From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo tells a rally of Planned Parenthood advocates he's proposing a constitutional amendment to put the protections of Roe v. Wade into the state's constitution. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the governor's move, and leaders of religious and civil rights organizations react to President Trump's executive order barring citizens from seven Muslim countries from entering the U.S. and blocking refugees for 120 days. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo told a crowd of cheering Planned Parenthood advocates at the Capitol this week that he's proposing a constitutional amendment to put the protections in the Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade into the state's constitution. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo says women's rights are under attack in Washington with the possible Supreme Court nominee from President Donald Trump that could lead to the repeal of the landmark 1973 abortion rights decision Roe v. Wade. The governor says in New York he'll try to protect those rights.
I want them to know today, if that's what they do, we're going to protect Roe v. Wade in the state of New York. I propose today a constitutional amendment to write Roe v. Wade into the New York State Constitution so that nobody can change it.
Cecile Richards, the president of National Planned Parenthood, who was also a featured speaker at the rally, applauded Cuomo's proposal, but afterwards says more is needed than state-by-state protections.
Absolutely not. This is so critical. This is a national right. And, of course, there's no good to have a constitutional right if you can't actually access it.
The attempt to write the protections from Roe v. Wade into New York's laws have been tried for a decade, beginning with former Governor Eliot Spitzer in 2007 and continuing with Governor Cuomo. But the measure has stalled in the Republican-led state Senate. Andrea Miller, with the National Institute for Reproductive Health, lobbied for the law for years in her former role with NARAL New York. She says even though New York has a law legalizing abortion, it was approved in 1970, 3 years before the Supreme Court decision, it's outdated and needs to be modernized. For instance, New York's law permits abortions after 24 weeks to save the life of the mother, but does not provide protections if the woman's health is in danger. The law is also under the state's criminal code, and Miller says it would make more sense to put it under the state's health statutes.
When there's such threat at the national level, we need clarity that abortion should not be regulated as a criminal act, that women's health must be paramount, and that this belongs in the health code that would allow it to be regulated like every other medical procedure as it should be.
GOP senators, some of whom are pro-choice, have said in the past that there's no need to approve abortion rights measures because Roe v. Wade was not in jeopardy. Miller says that's now changing, with President Trump expected to pick a conservative candidate to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court.
This is a new day. And we have always firmly believed that there are pro-choice senators who are not just in the Democratic conference.
Senate Democratic leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says, after all, the original 1970 abortion rights law was approved with the help of GOP lawmakers.
12 Republicans in the Senate voted with the majority of their Democratic senators to make sure that women's reproductive health choices were part of what New York State stands for and stood for. So why in 2017 we can't, once again, especially with women's health being so jeopardized by what's coming out of this new administration, we have to stand up.
Senator Stewart-Cousins called Cuomo's proposed constitutional amendment a very long game that requires two consecutively elected state legislatures. It could not go before voters until 2019 at the earliest. The Senate Republicans had no immediate comment. Several of the GOP lawmakers who voted for the abortion rights law back in 1970 were voted out of office later that year. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Leaders of religious and civil rights organizations continue responding to President Trump's executive order barring entry into the U.S. for citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries for 90 days and blocking refugees for 120 days. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
There have been protests and lawsuits, though Trump's supporters say the president is doing what he said he would do during the campaign, put America first. Reverend Chris Antal is president of the Greater Newburgh Interfaith Council, which represents about a dozen faith communities in Orange County. Clergy from the Interfaith Council gathered with the local Muslim community at the Masjid Ali Klaas Mosque in Newburgh Saturday to publicly repudiate President Trump's order. Here's Antal.
And this ban on refugees is like a ban on the Bible and a violation of our free exercise of religion and affront to human dignity. So this ban by President Trump on refugees entering the United States is like taking a wrecking ball to the Statue of Liberty and dashing the hopes of the huddled masses across the globe.
Antal is considering legal action.
I am seeking legal counsel about the possibility of taking legal action for the violation of the free exercise of religion of many people in our community.
Imam Islam Hassan, with the Islamic Society of Vermont, says he cannot change the travel ban but is concerned that last week's deadly shooting at a mosque in Quebec City will spark similar violence in the U.S.
We were also concerned that some people will have the guts now to go ahead and attack Muslims in their places of worship because they feel backed up by the government or feel backed up by the president. So go ahead and do anything you want. We don't want them here. Just go ahead, So we're afraid that this might be translate to violent actions against Muslims.
He says he'll meet with his congregation later in the week to talk more about the ban's effect.
We have a heavy Somali community and heavy Iraqi community here. I'm sure not all of them are citizens. Many of them came as refugees. I'm sure it does affect them. Yes, it does affect them, especially because most of our congregation, they leave on a regular basis to Canada. They cross the border and they come back again.
He supports strengthening national security, but not the discrimination detractors say is accompanying it. Meanwhile, Vermont Republican Governor Phil Scott says the state will not work with federal authorities to carry out border security and immigration enforcement orders, as suggested by Trump's recent executive orders. Back in New York, Republican Rockland County Executive Ed Day says there should be an orderly process of immigration.
How it's playing out obviously has upset many people. There should not be an outright ban based on religion or ethnicity. That is ridiculous. But I think we should get a handle on who's coming into this country. That, to me, is common sense.
Department of Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly says Trump's executive order on immigration and refugees is not a ban on Muslims. The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, the nation's largest Muslim civil rights and advocacy organization, announced Monday the filing of a federal lawsuit on behalf of more than 20 named and John Doe Muslim individuals lawfully residing in the U.S. Two of the John Does named in the suit reside in Albany County. The suit says one is a permanent resident and a Muslim of Sudanese origin who filed for U.S. citizenship and whose application CARE says will be denied based on his origin and religion. The second John Doe plaintiff is a Muslim American who filed a marriage petition for his pregnant wife, a petition CARE says now will be denied. The CARE suit is one of several filed by various groups across the country.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, Governor Cuomo was in front of a crowd of cheering Planned Parenthood advocates this week, proposing a constitutional amendment to put the protections in the Supreme Court decision Roe versus Wade into the state's constitution. Well, what about this move? Is it for New York as well as a larger audience?
Well, it may well be for a larger audience. It may well be for New York. It happens to be right. New York has always been a leader when it comes to doing the right thing. We do know that Planned Parenthood and the right for a woman to choose has been under tremendous pressure. So Cuomo, I don't care about his motives. I just care that he's doing the right thing here, and he is. So in my opinion, this may lead to a question as to whether we ought to have a constitutional convention. Well, we don't need a constitutional convention. What we need is the legislature in two successive sessions saying that we need this constitutional amendment and we can have it. And that, by the way, is why we don't really need a constitutional convention run by the same old politicians who bring us the legislature, because we're going to get the same thing at a great cost. But I digress. What is really important here is that we put these kinds of protections into the state constitution and, frankly, get rid of some of the flotsam and jetsam that makes this constitution a huge vat of unpleasantness.
Speaking of a vat of unpleasantness, probably the biggest news of the week occurred over the past weekend after Donald Trump signed the executive order travel ban for citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries for 90 days and blocking refugees for 120 days. And certainly New York fighting back. We're seeing now lawmakers from New York and New Jersey and the bi-state industry that runs the state's major airports not even wanting to put resources into enforcing the president's travel ban. And other states, Massachusetts, California, and what seems to be a battle now between the states and the federal government.
Well, it could get nasty, and that's what's so important here, David. The real issue to me is whether Trump will take money away from states he perceives as being against his executive order, which has caused so much controversy. If he does, it could cost states like New York millions and millions of dollars, I think even into the billions on things like Medicaid, if in fact Donald Trump decides that he wants to punish those who have not gone along with him. So, as I've said before, Andrew Cuomo is walking a big tightrope here. On the one hand, he acknowledges that we need to work together with the White House. He said that. But he also is taking a lead role in the anti-Trump forces. And that means, of course, that he is in real danger of losing this extraordinary money, which will put the New York State budget into the red. And we don't need it. So I'm glad I'm not him.
At the top of the list to fight for the Democrats, Charles Schumer of New York, the senator, who was rallying with refugees in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. The fight is on.
Well, it is. You know, I have a long list of people I don't think I'd like to be right now, even though I admire him so much. Chuck Schumer is playing with a very short deck. You know, he's got a Republican Senate. They're playing by their own set of rules. There is a question as to whether or not they're going to change those rules. Right now, they have to live by their filibuster rules. But if they see that they can't do it the way that they want to, they'll change the rules to make it a simple majority. I'm sure that Chuck Schumer will do his best. Talk about Excedrin headaches.
Speaking of, Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan testifying to lawmakers yesterday that Albany is in crisis, that basically too many major public buildings off the books.
Not-for-profit. Yeah, there's a lot of not-for-profits, too, and taxes are not paid. That's one of the reasons we have not-for-profits, so that they can be protected. On the other hand, there's a lot of government buildings. Sheehan's making the right points. This is a point which is made every year during every budget and sometimes gets something back, but not nearly what ought to be coming back to Albany, which is, after all, an estuary city. Well, what do you mean estuary? Well, it's like the Hudson River. The salt water comes up the river, the salt water goes down the river. That is an estuary, and that's what happens in Albany, which is a transitional town. On every Monday night, out they come, the legislature, back they go. The restaurants do well when these guys are here, not so well when they're not. And the tax base, as Mayor Sheehan quite correctly says, limited. So there you are.
Well, Yancey Roy, someone who you talked to, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday, has a column this week in which he says just weeks into the 2017 legislative session, it seems to be Governor Andrew Cuomo versus, well, fill in the blank. Battles with the Senate Republicans, battles with the Senate Democrats, derogatory texts and tweets, a snub of the customary budget address in exchange for an unusual set of private briefings that didn't patch anything and maybe made things worse, including accusations over Senate defection. Not going well?
All true. It's not going well between the two houses. It turns out, of course, that Cuomo, in a historical fashion, offered them a deal. He said, you pass meaningful ethics reform, I'll give you your raise. Now, they say, that's an insult. That shouldn't happen. But nobody believes that. We all believe that the legislature is a mess, a teeming mess. And it needs to be reformed. It needs to set limits on outside income. The people in the legislature who don't get outside income should be fighting for it, instead of which they're lying back and letting the others push them around. And as long as that happens, people are going to have real disdain for the legislature and for its leadership. My sense of it is that they really hate Cuomo on this one thing, but he comes out on top because whether you like the man or not, he's right. So there you go again. It is just a question of whether Cuomo has boxed them in to the point where they really have to look at their public and say, are we here to serve the public or are we here to serve ourselves?
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A bipartisan push for tougher animal rights laws is on in New York State. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has the details.
Area state legislators have fingers crossed that this is the year an enhanced animal rights bill will reach the assembly floor for a vote and be signed into law. The Senate passed a similar bill each of the last 4 years, attempting to toughen animal cruelty and abuse laws. Republican Senator Jim Tedisco says the measure passed in the Senate last year by a 59-1 vote.
But unfortunately, with the downstate interests we have, who don't seem to be really concerned about public safety in our upstate areas and across the state in many instances, it hasn't been able to get through the last committee or the last hurdle in the New York State Assembly.
Now, Tedisco and his Republican colleague, Senator George Amador, have partnered with Democratic Assemblyman Angelo Santa Barbara in calling for passage of a measure rechristened Kirby and Quigley's Law, so named for two Montgomery County dogs that were shot and killed during a home burglary about a year ago. Amador hopes strong bipartisan support will put the bill on the fast track to the governor's desk.
This bill expands the definition of aggravated cruelty to animals under the Buster's Law, and we need to do everything we can to protect all members of our families, two-legged as well as four-legged family members. So this is an important law, and it's unfortunate that this hasn't been done sooner. The assembly continues to hold things up, and anyone who commits such heinous crimes against an animal needs to be properly punished.
The bill would broaden Buster's Law, making it a felony to harm a pet during commission of another felony. Tedisco notes that killing a pet can lead to larger kills later on down the road.
Those who hurt our companion pets or animals and use aggravated cruelty in their actions toward them go on to hurt human beings. The FBI has put this up on an A level, that individuals who will be cruel to animal will be the individuals who are most likely to go on to be serial murderers. And we all know the names, Son of Sam, Ted Bundy, Dahmer, the Columbine kids. All had a history of abusing animals before they became serial murderers. And this bill says, and it's most importantly, that if you're committing a crime like a burglary or any other felony, if you do indeed murder, harm, or illustrate under Buster's Law aggravated cruelty towards a companion pet or other animal, you could be convicted of another felony, which would add an additional 2 years and $5,000 penalty.
Santa Barbara says the bill hits home for him. His autistic son has bonded with the family dog.
A little 3-pound Yorkie. My son was diagnosed with autism at age 3. He's 15 now, and he has trouble communicating, so it's It's hard for him to make friends. This dog is his friend. And if he were to lose his friend, it would be pretty devastating for him.
Santa Barbara adds that the law sends a message that anyone who takes the life of an innocent animal during commission of another crime will be held accountable. The bill was scheduled to be taken up once again in the New York Senate on Monday afternoon.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The village of Canajoharie and Montgomery County are hoping to demolish certain structures at the shuttered Beechnut factory. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports an upcoming court date could move things forward after the project was awarded a $500,000 state grant this week.
The empty Beechnut baby food factory in Canajoharie looms over the Mohawk Valley community. The site, that at one time supported the area with thousands of jobs, is contaminated with asbestos and black mold, and local officials are hoping to tear down structures they see as a safety threat. The village, working with the county, is hoping to demolish dilapidated warehousing and three bridges on the property. The 1 million-square-foot site, however, is still owned by company TD Development, which owes about $1.7 million in back taxes. So the village has scheduled a state Supreme Court hearing in early February to try to prove that the work is necessary. Canajoharie Mayor Francis Avery.
Frankly, we are well aware of our responsibility in redevelopment, and we have but one chance to get it right. And this is what we're really trying to do.
Montgomery County Executive Matt Ausenfort said the county and village are hoping to gather a total of $1 million to do work on the parcel this spring. A major component of that funding is a $500,000 Restore New York grant. Ausenfort said there has been some environmental and other surveying work done on the site, but the physical work on the property is the next goal.
Really, the people of the village really want to see some actual progress. It's great that we're getting all the environmental work done and all the behind-the-scenes work that needs to be done, but we're really excited about getting some actual physical progress of improving that site next year.
The county does reserve the right to foreclose on the property, and there is some support to do so, since taxes have gone unpaid for years. But Ausenfort said it is vitally important that the county get releases of liability from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency before foreclosure is considered. He said that would ensure the county would not take ownership of something that could bankrupt it.
Until we get to a point where we have those releases, the county is not going to foreclose. But I will say that we have enough access to the site to do everything we've needed to do up to this point. So foreclosure hasn't been a requirement.
Ausenfort said the county is aware of talks between the site's owners and another company about a possible sale, but added the county's position is not to negotiate the $1.7 million in back taxes.
Should those back taxes be paid, then that would certainly be a different story, but we're not exactly expecting that to happen in the near future.
With the court date scheduled for next week and grant dollars on the horizon, Mayor Avery says the village is ready to act.
When that money is awarded and we have Judge Sice's decision granting us permission to go in there, then we'll begin demolition.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1705 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.